Welcome back. It's a Monday, the first day of April 2019, and let's start off with the big news appropriate to the day. Overnight, SWAT teams raided the homes of a whole bunch of treasonous criminals, including Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Bruce Anelli, Orr, Andrew McCabe, James Comey, Hillary Clinton, Loretta Lynch Mob, John Brennan, James Clapper, and even Robert Mueller. Several were reported to have broken down in tears and confessed to treason on the spot. And yeah, I know, you know, April Fools, because SWAT teams in America are only used against people wearing MAGA hats or maybe not vaccinating their children. But the thing is, this is news that a lot of people have been expecting to hear for a long time, and if we had a rule of law, should have heard a long time ago. But it still seems like the only day we can actually talk about it is April Fools. Now, the big difference here between what we're talking about on this show and the Mueller report is that all of those people who were breathlessly lying about the Mueller Russia deal for so long never did bother to say April Fools, much less mea culpa, I'm sorry, please forgive me for lying through my teeth for 2 years. And I wish that was an April Fools joke. We do, however, have this, and actually it's not an April Fool's joke. Comes courtesy of Jim Hoft at the Gateway Pundit, and it says, Clapper sings. On Monday, the former director of national intelligence, sick, Lion James Clapper, went on CNN's Lion Anderson Cooper, evidently another CIA good buddy, to discuss the Mueller report after its release last Sunday. And as you already know, the wasted two-year witch hunt produced nothing in the way of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia, and of course they deliberately overlooked the obvious stuff that they knew darn well about, their own collusion with Russia in the form of Uranium One, and as we're now beginning to see, other things. Mueller, it says, also didn't find any evidence of conspiracy after President Trump fired the crooked criminal whoremeister in charge of the FBI, James Comey. And Clapper has been a notorious defender of the Obama regime and its spying on their political opponents during the election. But what is interesting is that Clapper did actually implicate his boss, Bathhouse Barry, in some actions that are obviously a lot worse than the press has been accusing the president of, the elected president. Said Clapper, in response to a question, one point I'd like to make, Anderson, that I don't think has come up very much before, and I'm alluding now to the president's criticism of President Obama for all that he did or didn't do before he left office with respect to the Russian meddling. If it weren't for President Obama, we might not have done the intelligence community assessment that we did that set off a whole sequence of events which are still unfolding today, notably Special Counsel Mueller's investigation. Sick. But here's the key, folks. Quote, President Obama is responsible for that, and it was he who tasked us to do that intelligence community assessment in the first place. I think it's an important point when it comes to critiquing President Obama. Unquote. And, well, I guess it's a bit late to say let the prosecutions begin, isn't it? But it looks like the triangulation certainly has. Maybe Clapper didn't get the plausible deniability memo. So here's another one that isn't April Fool's, unfortunately, but does fit, about creepy Joe Biden, who's in trouble again, having long since well-earned that nickname. A couple of headlines to kick it off. Biden faces new scrutiny from Dems over his behavior with women, says the Associated Press piece, while the Los Angeles Times puts it this way. Joe Biden's history of unwanted touching threatens to put off women voters. Yet another allegation, this time that he inappropriately touched a Nevada state lawmaker and sniffed creepily at her hair, is renewing questions about his appeal to women as he seeks the socialist presidential nomination. In a New York Magazine web post on Friday, former Nevada Assemblywoman Lucy Flores wrote she felt demeaned and disrespected when Biden touched her offstage at a 2014 campaign rally. She felt his hands on her shoulders and froze, quote, he leaned in further and inhaled my hair, she wrote. I was mortified. And then while wondering why the Veep was smelling her hair, she continued, he proceeded to plant a big slow kiss on the back of my head. My brain couldn't process what was happening. I was embarrassed. I was shocked. I was confused. All of this made her feel, quote, gross, and she wanted nothing more, she wrote, than to get Biden away from me. Unquote. Which probably applies to most Americans and most of her party nowadays. Anyway, Biden defended himself, wrote the AP, and doesn't believe he's ever acted inappropriately, although he has a long history of exactly this kind of thing, often with females that were a whole lot younger than this one. Oh, quick aside here that I found after I finished the first part of the recording. The End of the American Dreams, Michael Snyder even has a piece up entitled Irrefutable Evidence, no less than 10 videos that show creepy Joe Biden touching women and girls inappropriately. Yeah, better watch them before they get taken down off of YouTube and crammed into the memory hole. And maybe, folks, that's the real problem here, besides the fact that Biden is white, and Pocahontas may be able to help him fix that. Or, well, on second thought, maybe not, but it all depends on whether you get caught. More importantly, though, if these had been little boys instead, they'd probably be rushing to his defense, says your increasingly cynical host. But ultimately, folks, I do have to say, gee, isn't this much ado about nothing? At least for the nutcase left. After all, he's been called Creepy Joe Biden for years, for a reason. And let's be real here. He's a good socialist. He touches your kids. He touches your wives. He touches your wallets. And he wants to run your life. What's not to like from the left? From there, we have to go on to stuff that's not so funny at all, especially on April Fool's Day, because it's not. From the People's Republic of Colorado, and your host is too close to the erstwhile capital there, Denver, the wannabe San Francisco of the Rockies, which is certainly way out of touch with the rural parts of the state, but that might not help, because the lying, oath-breaking so-called lawmakers there in the capital have decided the hell with their oaths, and we're going to gang-rape the Second Amendment like so much of the rest of the country is intent on doing, via some abominations that have a number of names, from red flags to ERPOs, which might be more appropriate if you think about it. Stands for Emergency Risk Protection Order, and the real emergency is increasingly people figuring out what's going on and rising up using those arms before they're taken away. Here's the story from over the weekend, where Rally for Our Rights Executive Director Leslie Hollywood issued a statement in response to the passage of an abomination called HB 19-1177 concerning red flag ERPOs, which, in case you've forgotten, authorized the theft of property in violation of due process, oh, and that Second Amendment thing as well, saying that gun rights advocates, or anybody who can read, across Colorado are extremely disappointed in the hyper-partisan passage of that abomination by a single vote. The bill was opposed by every Republican in the legislature, as well as three Democrats, and it had opposition from not only thousands of citizens statewide, dozens of sheriffs, city councils, police chiefs, and even the Denver and Aurora police unions, because, obviously, it's blatantly unconstitutional and dangerous. And as your host has noted previously, it's certainly another major push towards the almost inevitable now civil war. The group added, how privileged are those lawmakers to pass law they will never have to enforce, while those who have to enforce it are already saying no. A related story from Shepard Ambellus at IntelliHub points out that, well, for one example, the Weld County Sheriff Steve Reams took an oath to support the U.S. Constitution. He's serious about it and said he's willing to go to jail to protect other Americans' freedoms rather than enforce that new abomination of a gun law. Quote, it's a matter of doing what's right, said the good sheriff. Over the weekend, this story made the rounds. I think you could call it related. A family in Arizona, wrote Ethan Huff for Natural News, among many others, is having to endure the wrath of the medical police state after a doctor there, sick, decided to call the Department of Child Safety, aka CPS and other acronyms in other totalitarian states, for not vaccinating a child, resulting in an armed SWAT team raiding the family's home and not only seizing the one who wasn't vaccinated, but their other two children as well, all of whom were placed in temporary foster homes, where communicable diseases, in particular things like measles, may be the least of their worries. And then there's this, also related, from J.D. Hayes at the same source, about a SWAT team and a no-knock raid in Houston that occurred in late January, where the fallout continues after two middle-aged homeowners were killed and four officers wounded in a subsequent gun battle, and four cops have retired since the incident. Ammoland reports it this way. Dennis Tuttle was a Navy veteran, while his wife, Regina Nicholas, was a supporter of President Trump. Ah, there you can see where the trouble begins. They had no criminal records, had been married for 20 years, lived in a modest home in Houston for that same period of time. But on January 28th, a SWAT team broke down their door, shot the couple's dog. Hey, what else is new? And according to reports, Tuttle armed himself and decided to fire back, wounding the officer who killed his dog, and then began the gunfight. And although police claimed that Tuttle was firing at them with a .357 revolver, no such gun was actually discovered on the scene. Amoland says it was probably more likely he was shooting with one of the two semi-auto hunting shotguns recovered in his home. But in any case, when his wife tried to take the shotgun away from the wounded officer, she was shot and killed, even though it's not clear, says Amoland, whether she actually ever touched the so-called officer's weapon. And I say that, of course, because someone who breaks down a door under color of law isn't a real officer at all. Acting outside their oath and their authority, they're nothing but a criminal. Breaking and entering, although certainly armed. Early police reports, and they're subject to change, claim that Tuttle continued to fight police, wounding three additional officers, but, says the story, the exact timing of events, as well as even what happened that morning, isn't clear, because none of the officers were wearing body cams, and surveillance video from the next door neighbor's home was subsequently, I hope you're sitting down, confiscated by police. Says the follow-up story, an investigation into the incident has discovered that the evidence, sick, used to justify the SWAT raid was falsified. Sounds like something they would do to the president, doesn't it? Following the raid, executive director of the Texas branch of the ACLU, Terry Burke, said no-knock raids put both police officers and residents in extreme unnecessary danger. We encourage other big city chiefs and law enforcement agencies that have jurisdiction in Houston to take proactive steps to change these policies rather than wait for tragedies, I guess you'd have to say additional tragedies now, to occur. Still, though, immediately after the raid, the Houston Police Union went on the offensive, according to KTNV Las Vegas. They didn't hold back. Joe Grimaldi of the Houston Police Officers Union said, "We're sick and tired of having targets on our back. We're sick and tired of having dirtbags trying to take our lives." Unquote. And you do have to ask, well, then, why don't you quit breaking down people's doors and killing their dogs? Says the story. Follow-on investigations and reporting do seem to indicate that by all accounts, police fired first, and the officers were certainly not ambushed. And also, it was, remember, a no-knock raid premised on faulty evidence based on an informant that investigators now cannot even confirm ever existed. And this, folks, is the same kind of attitude that results in emergency risk protection orders to take away people's guns, based on the same kind of anti-constitutional lawlessness. How many will die, you have to ask, before enough is enough, or it's too late and the die is cast? One more brief respite of good news on this April Fool's Day, and no, it's not a joke, even though Jim Hoft and the Gateway Pundit say a lot of anti-constitutionalists wish it was. According to Axios, President Trump is saving conservative Catholic Judge Amy Barrett to replace none other than Ruth Bader Ginsburg when she finally leaves the court. The 86-year-old, of course, is in, to put it mildly, questionable health. And as The Hill puts it, President Trump has reportedly said he is saving Judge Amy Barrett of the U.S. Court of Appeals from the Seventh Circuit to replace Ginsburg. And she was a popular choice among conservatives as a candidate to replace Anthony Kennedy before Trump eventually nominated a lesser judge, Brett Kavanaugh. And yes, folks, some of the press calls her cultish because she actually believes in God. From there, on we go to economics via Jim Sinclair's website, jsmindset.com, and, of course, John Williams and Shadow Stats. For his bullet edition number 5 for the 1st of April, that goes like this. For the coming transition to fiscal stimulation from practically nothing, call it QE to infinity, as Sinclair does, reporting quality issues, says Shadow Stats, mount with the shutdown catch-up data still being absorbed. Fourth quarter 2018 GDP slowed sharply, with further downside adjustments pending. Come the July 26th benchmarking, industrial production benchmark revision patterns, he says, suggested still slower fourth quarter and near contraction first quarter activity, while contracting first and second quarter 2019 GDP activity likely follows. The housing sector remains in deep recession despite government shutdown disrupted headline numbers, and the U.S. economy continues to weaken more sharply and quickly than has been widely acknowledged, signaling a formal recession, says John Williams, triggered by overly aggressive FOMC tightening and rate hikes over the last year or so. All in all, not the narrative that the waste stream is pushing. Yet. Another economic story from over the weekend that isn't getting much coverage comes from Michael Snyder, the Economic Collapse blog. It's about what he calls the Midwest apocalypse, because satellite data is now showing at least 1 million acres of U.S. farmland have been devastated by the winter floods. And if you follow the economic implications, it's certainly not good for food prices. "We've never before seen anything like this," he begins. "According to satellite data just released by Reuters, at least 1 million acres of U.S. farmland have been covered by water for at least 7 days as of March. That's an agricultural disaster," he says, "without equal in modern American history." Yet the waste stream media is treating it like some kind of second-class story, which it isn't. It ought to be, he says, the biggest news story of 2019 so far, and that's saying quite a bit. And this one follows on the heels of another of his stories that he entitled, "As Many as 1 Million Calves Have Been Lost in Nebraska, So Look for Beef Prices to Escalate Dramatically Over the Next Few Months as Well." Farms from the Dakotas to Missouri, it says, and beyond, have been underwater, as we've already mentioned, for a week or more, impeding planting and damaging soil. And the floods coming just weeks before planting season is due to begin in the Midwest will likely reduce corn, wheat, and soy production this year. And even though, as you're probably aware, over 90% of U.S. corn and soy is actually frankenfood anyway, the price impacts will still be felt by the final consumers, whether they eat that stuff or not. Furthermore, he says, authorities are already saying at least $3 billion in economic damage has resulted, although the final number will almost certainly be higher. This final piece today comes courtesy of Mike Adams at Natural News, and it's entitled "Analysis: Why the Treasonous Left Will Suffer a Brutal Loss in the Coming Civil War as Power, Water, and Food Supply Lines Are Cut by Rural Patriots Defending America." And the following comes from some analysis I put together for the Sabbath teaching over the weekend.
This, he says, is true given that deranged leftists have now convincingly demonstrated they cannot coexist with anyone else in a civil society. Left-wing operatives, meaning lawmakers, fake news, journo terrorists, and deep state actors, and even not-so-deep state idiot actors like Jussie Smollett. They're lawless liars, frauds, hoaxers, and destroyers of civilization. They steal elections, push fake news, brainwash the public with deliberate lies, indoctrinate children, not only with sexual perversion, but hatred for their own country. These are the pedophiles, child traffickers, charlatans, and tyrants. The left, as he said before, is a suicide cult, and they will not stop, clearly, till they've criminalized, marginalized, or mass murdered everyone who knows better and opposes their authoritarian rule. Most of these folks won't come out and say it. I will. What they truly hate, folks, even worse than all of those people, the deplorables, as Hitler calls all of us, they hate the God of the Bible, they hate His Word, and they hate those who worship Him. In any case, as deranged and dangerous as the leftists are, he says, stopping them in a civil war scenario is tactically simpler than you might suppose, because the leftists are all concentrated in the major socialist hub cities. You know the names: New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, etc. And every city is a death trap that depends on outside supply lines to continue its existence. To defeat the anti-American socialist leftist forces, the pro-Americans don't even have to enter the cities. All they have to do is cut off the cities from rural America, which is where all the resources come from that keep them alive. Now, here he stops. He does this over and over again. I'll just do it once. Disclaimer. This article, he says, is an analysis of events that are likely to occur. That doesn't mean it's advocacy. He's not pushing for violence or sabotage against anyone. We pray for peace and pray that a second civil war in America can be averted. But this is an analysis of what may unfold if it's not stopped beforehand. And of course, given what we all see, I don't think anybody expects that it's going to be stopped. But we can continue and should to pray that it will. This is his analysis. Rural America is where the water comes from. It's where the food is grown. It's where the electricity is transported and the city sewage is dumped. Yet the cities run by delusional leftists seek to nullify the power of rural America. If you ever study the history of the United States and ask yourself why a bicameral House and Senate, right? Why two houses in the U.S. Congress, House and Senate? The Senate was to represent the states, two from each state, big states, little states. The House was represented in terms of population. But the whole point of the Electoral College is to make sure that the rural areas that aren't dense in population, but, well, should have, their political influence is still there. What's the left trying to do now? Get rid of the Electoral College so that they can infiltrate the cities with more socialists and basically say, the hell with anybody that doesn't live within our socialist control zones.
And now we see Denver trying to do that to rural Colorado with their unconstitutional Erpo gun theft. And Adams points out they can be cut off.
Cities seek to destroy the political power of rural America and rule over real America as tyrants. And eventually that consent of the outlying deplorables will be revoked.
Adams talks about biosludge and how the cities literally export their poop into the rural countryside and then pat themselves on the back for their wonderful recycling. But the truth is, were the countrysides to cut that off, they would not only wallow in their own feces, but rapidly descend into third world Mogadishu status, just like San Francisco. But there's more.
Rural patriotic Americans could easily take out the substations that feed power to the cities. Turns out there's more to the EMP threat and the power grid threat
than just external enemies or solar flares.
You might actually have, as Adams points out, rural patriots saying, you know what, let's just cut off the power to New York City, Washington, D.C. See how they like that. They're extremely vulnerable to sabotage. At length, he quotes Matt Bracken. As the vicious Civil War swings into full speed, he says, quote, the odds are high that the power grid itself will become the target of 10,000 attacks, because the lines run through both friendly and unfriendly enemy territory. Every faction will have a veto on their downstream enemies, power grid and water supply. Trucking routes disappear in this dangerous environment. People will rapidly figure out it's much easier to turn Minneapolis into Mogadishu than the other way around. Isn't Minneapolis pretty well already Mogadishu of Minnesota? Bracken calls it a dirty civil war, meaning it's messy and chaotic. And the cities will rapidly become uninhabitable without power, water, and food. Imagine L.A. with no EBT cards, no food stamps, says Adams, no air conditioning, no Wi-Fi. In 48 hours, L.A. becomes a war zone with armed gangs that go door-to-door robbing, killing, raping, pillaging, and, of course, cannibalizing. And this is what the liberals and their policies have been pushing for. No police protection, no firearms for self-defense, and no prosecutions of criminals if they happen to be minorities. And he says, Jesse Smollett, anyone? Without a power grid, L.A. collapses into something even worse, far worse even, than Venezuela. Becomes a cesspool of filth, blah, blah. Again, just like San Francisco, only faster. They'll impose harsh, draconian measures, but it won't be enough. No matter how draconian the emergency decrees, new laws by themselves won't restore the power grid, purify or pump the water, or get the food supply moving again. That will eventually require the end of the Civil War and a return to civility and, dum-da-da-dum, the rule of law. Upshot of this, he says, don't be anywhere close to a liberal city when Civil War II gets underway. And, oh, by the way, yes, an EMP would do the very same thing. Back to Matt Bracken, who says, I've observed that before every notorious genocide, the same pattern of marginalizing and demonizing a designated scapegoat population has occurred. Isn't it obvious the American left intends to eventually commit genocide against what he calls white heritage American males? In my opinion, yes. Scapegoating is part of the clear pattern of conduct we've seen during every socialist power grab from the French Revolution on.
And you know the history. I won't repeat it. Adams believes all of this comes to a head not later than the 2020 election. And he makes a pretty convincing case saying, look, the election coming up is going to be contested no matter who wins. If the president's reelected, Trump derangement syndrome goes into warp drive.
They go full lunatic. They start bombing buildings, executing Trump supporters in the streets, setting fire to government buildings. They're already physically attacking anybody in a MAGA hat. That's just a warm-up for what would come. On the other hand, if the socialists win, we already know that could only have been accomplished the way they stole the midterms, right? Massive voter fraud, media collusion, big tech censorship, illegal ballot harvesting.
And even more of Florida nationwide. And the pro-America forces won't accept that outcome either. So America fractures on or before Election Day 2020.
No more coexistence with the left. The leftists have already decided they'll never accept the outcome of any election they don't win. So, remember, he says, in all-out war, there are no rules.
And no wonder they're rushing to disarm those they intend to subjugate. So be thinking about where you want to be, where you don't, and, of course, who we serve. May Yahuwah bless you and yours.